As always, I thank the double achsanias, the shul, and the Katz family. Sfiras Omer is a tricky time of year in the sense that there are two different phenomena that occur at the same time, which are kind of one overlay on the other, which are not only independent and different, but on some level even contradictory. Sfiras Omer is a mitzvah that's in the Torah. It's a question whether nowadays without the karbanos, if it's a Torah obligation still, mitzvah daraisa, or maybe now because it's only a zecher, because we don't have a karban anymore, derabanan, but it's an independent mitzvah which connects the two karbanos, or perhaps more broadly, the two holidays of Pesach and Shavuos. And the truth is that at worst, it would have been a parv time of year, and at least according to a number of mafarshim, like the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch, it's actually a very happy time of year. We're counting in anticipation of Matan Torah. What could be better? We have our physical freedom, Yitzhak Mitzrayim on Pesach. We're going to have our spiritual destiny at Har Sinai. Very exciting, wonderful time. And yet, for as long as any of us can remember, it's become this sad, somber time to fight with the kids about if they can listen to music or they can't listen to music. What else is counted in the music? I have the music on when I'm doing this in the background. Can I exercise with the music? I can't. Is a cappella allowed? It's not allowed. Is tapes allowed? It's not allowed. What? It's so... You know, so on some level, we all heard this. You know, we know this idea about Rabbi Akiva and his students, and speak about that in a moment. But to just take a pause, we should just realize it's so confusing to people. People think that somehow the Torah mandated this is a mournful time. The truth of the matter is, assuming that we date the mourning of Sfira at Rabbi Akiva and of his students, so we're talking, you know, only the time of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. But there's a lot of Jewish history before then, where the Omer was a completely different experience. And yet for us, kind of that's like the ground floor. And then overlaying on top of that, we have this, quote, new phenomenon called the mourning, the avelus of Sfira. And even that, if I was giving a halachic shiur, which I'm not, has really evolved in many stages. If you look in the original sources that discuss the mourning, they only discuss one thing, no weddings. There's no indication of haircuts, of music, of dance, none of that. It all comes in different stages, and in different communities it became adopted in different ways. Nowadays we have a pretty comprehensive type of a mourning, but all of this is kind of secondary. There are other mafarshim who point out that a lot of the terrible tragedies during the time of the Crusades happened during this period. That's the Avarachim that we say on Shabbos, even this past week, Shabbos Mevarachim. We say it during the Sfira because if you read the words Avarachim, it's for people who died on Kiddush Hashem, and even though it has many, it could apply to many types of situations, it's authored specifically because of the Crusades, which many of which happened during this time period. But that notwithstanding, the classical sources that we're most familiar with attribute this phenomenon, this kind of schizophrenia, this kind of mourning, despite what should have been a perhaps a happy and exciting time, attribute this mourning to the story with Rabbi Akiva and his students. So aside from the fact that it comes from a little bit of a confusing place, I think the phenomenon itself is somewhat confusing, and I don't think that enough of us really think about it, study it, and if we don't do that, then like everything, we don't really get what we're supposed to be getting out of it. If we're already not going to be listening to music and getting a haircut and all these other things, so we might as well at least get what we're supposed to be getting out of the time period. So what I would like to do with you is really a few things. Number one is I want to go through with you the basic sources that talk about Rabbi Akiva, his students, what seems to have happened. Number one. Then I want to ask a few questions because I think we take the story for granted. But if you think about the story and our mourning of Rabbi Akiva's students, there's actually a few very curious things which need to be addressed. And then I want to hopefully address systematically the two or three questions that we'll ask in a way that I think will hopefully give us not only greater appreciation to the story, tragic as it is, and understanding the minhagim that we've adopted, but of course, most importantly, give us something practical that we can hopefully take home from this kind of cholent. So that's the agenda. So far, so good? Okay, let's dig in. So the Gemara says in Maseches Yevamos on Daf Samach Beis that there was this horrific tragedy with Rabbi Akiva. Now think about for a minute, the Gemara says, at least in our version of the Gemara, that he had 12,000 zugos, which would seem to refer to chavrusas, or pairs of students, which, if you do the math, means he had 24,000 students. That's a lot of Talmidim. What, that's more than four times the size of the mirror? Right? The mirror is nothing. It's like a teeny little hole in the wall. Anyway, you know, all these little yeshivas say, where are you? Oh, we're near the mirror. You know, the mirror was a little hole in the wall yeshiva near Rabbi Akiva. 24,000 students. It's an astonishing thing. And it seems like they're relatively concentrated in the north of Eretz Yisrael, relatively speaking. It was just, must have been an amazing thing to have. And again, they weren't all in one base medrash. They didn't yet find the gevir who could build that big a base medrash. But they all had apparently one main Rebbe, one leader, one person who set the tone, Rabbi Akiva. And then, says the Gemara, Kula Mesu Beperek Echad. They all died at one time. So, before we go further, just think for a moment, just about the human tragedy. Could you imagine? Initially, the Gemara doesn't say exactly how long this took place. But whatever the time period would be, the Gemara on the first line says Perek Echad. So some period which could be identified. 24,000 people. This is again, for those, I've quoted it before, I wasn't just in America, I was in Manhattan on 9/11. Right? I could see right down, you could even see the smoke billowing. Horrific tragedy of about 3,000 people. So this was eight times that. 24,000 students. And now, when you add to the fact they weren't just students, they weren't just people, they weren't just human beings, which would be bad enough. They were Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, and not just anyone, they were budding Talmid Chachamim, major Talmid Chachamim, Gedolei Yisrael. 24,000. All died. Gemara at the end says that they died a Misa Ra'ah, a horrible death. And the Gemara gives a word which I'm not exactly sure what it means. The Gemara wants to identify it, but it seems, according to some of the commentaries, it was some kind of a throat disease. But it was an epidemic. You know, it was one of those, you can imagine the people, they had the masks on, and they were quarantining, and could you imagine? It must have been, just again, I don't think we bother even to think about it. Just what would that have been like at the time? So, how could it happen? You know, was it the bird flu? Was it some kind of outbreak? So says the Gemara, it's because they did a sin. What was the sin? You all know. So the Gemara says, Shalom nohagu kavod zebuzeh. So for now, we'll just translate that. They didn't treat each other with respect. It's worth noting that there is a parallel version of the story in the Medrash. And for now, I'll just point out two anomalies, two slight differences. One is just curious, but the other one I think is perhaps more intriguing. First of all, the Medrash there refers to 12,000 Talmidim, not 12,000 parents. It's hard to know if it means to be precise. Is it really a machlokus about the number, or is one just an error? Hard to know. But whatever it is, it's a huge number. But the Gemara there does not say that they didn't give kavod. Here's, I'll read the Lashon of the Medrash, excuse me. Tell me if you think there's a difference. The Medrash says, Haisa einehem tsara elu be'elu. Anyone want to translate that? Anyone want to take an attempt? What does that mean to have tsara? I think I would probably also say, meitzarim narrow. Sarasayin. That's how I would just. How do you translate that? Good. How do you translate that? This is exactly how my mind worked. That's good to know. I'm not alone. But I still wonder, how do you translate it? It could be in simple Hebrew too, if that's easier. If that's someone's first language. But give me a perush. What does that mean, Sarasayin? Yeah.
I think it's generally translated so they couldn't forgive one another. They...
Good. So we went from Aramaic to Hebrew to Yiddish. I'm waiting. Nebuch, poor English. I don't know if I know what you mean by fagin. I don't know if everyone here does. Yeah, how do you translate fagin? Huh? Stingy, they couldn't. I grew up from my bubby. I can't. She always would tell me there's certain people, they can't forget anyone any success. I don't know what that means. Although I want to know. I want to know. If I heard you correctly, you said, what about a dog in a mansion?
Manger.
Oh, mate? Oh, yeah?
No, it's a farm where they said that Yoshka came and that's where she got food.
Yeah.
A barn? Oh, okay.
Okay, anyway, so again, so what is that? So from the beginning.
The mention means that you can't forgive anybody.
We're back to forgive.
Because if somebody has something and you can't have it, why
Good. That's what I think. That is what we're talking about. Right. You can't be happy for them. You can't. You know. Right. I think it's all true. I think we get the gist of it. Some of the most important things in life can't be reduced to single words. This is one of those. So I think that. So it's interesting. So now let's go back to the Gemara. Shlonogu kavadzebaze. That might mean something more or less the same, or it might mean something different. I think in my mind, I don't mean they're opposites, but they give you just a little bit of sense. We want to try to understand. That's really the purpose of tonight's shiur, to try to understand what went wrong. So we need to know first what the problem was, then we can diagnose how it happened. So not giving people kavod is a little bit different than saras ayin, than not being willing to be happy for other people, to not want other people to be successful, to not allow other people to enjoy, etc. It's interesting. It's not going to be the main focus of this year. Just planting it in your mind for your own thoughts.
Maybe when somebody had a really good thought, they couldn't begin them the thought. They didn't show respect to the intellectual.
So you could try to put them together.
Yeah, they're intellectual. They had a great idea, and really, you wish you had that.
Yeah, idea. Yeah. Listen,
they
I.
They had that idea, and they wouldn't respect it because. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Else
good, yes. I think that is possible. I'll give you one other story from a completely different Gemara, and I think it fits into one or both of these. The Gemara in Maseches Nedarim and Daf Mem, talking about the mitzvah Bikur Cholim. And of all people, the Gemara says, who is an exemplar of that? Rabbi Akiva. But the Gemara says there was a Talmud Rabbi Akiva who was very, very sick. And the Gemara goes out of its way to say, and none of the other Talmudim visited him. None of the other Talmidim visited this boy. Only Rabbi Akiva. Yeah, completely different Gemara. Doesn't make any reference to the students, to the dying. Just parenthetically, the Gemara says there was a guy. He was very sick. Rabbi Akiva went. It says, just since we're on the topic, it's important because Cholim is an important mitzvah. So the Gemara actually says, what did Rabbi Akiva do that was so great? He took care of not only the person's physical needs directly, even indirectly. He cleaned up the room. You know, when you're sick, things fall apart. You can't worry about it, you're in bed. So what did the floors look like in the time of Rabbi Akiva? Not like this. They were dirt floors. So Rabbi Akiva says he swept the floor. Rabbi Akiva, picture in your mind, whoever you think the modern day Rabbi Akiva is, he went and he swept the floor. Not his shamus, not his gabbai, not his rebbetzin. Rabbi Akiva went and swept the floor. And what else did he do? He sprinkled water. So I know now people would think, if you said there's a certain Rebbe, you know, maybe it was Baba Sali, he slept, you know, somebody thinks it's some Kabbalah. It wasn't Kabbalah. That's how you get rid of the dust. Right? You have, you know, too much water will make it all muddy. But a little bit of water onto the dirt, so it's not going to be all dusty. So Rabbi Akiva, apparently, again, whether that was some, whether Rabbi Akiva realized it or not, that helped with the hygienics of the room, or it was just the cleanliness, and it lifted his spirit. Either way, the Gemara says that the person had a recovery, and he thanked Rabbi Akiva, and he says, you're the one who helped me recuperate. And the Gemara says, see, from here, Rabbi Akiva said, Bikur Cholim can lift even a part of the Misa. So it's a very important Gemara with a lot of insights about Bikur Cholim. But it's also important for us. It's not what Rabbi Akiva did, but that no one else. No one else visited. Isn't that amazing? Could you imagine such a thing? A whole chabura of people? Now, this one boy did not know the other 23,999, presumably. But some of them, right? How would we, I'll have to put in the modern parlance. Some of them were in his dira. Some of them went to camp with him. You know, some of them know him from Mechina. Somebody had to have somebody. No one visited him. Only the Rebbe had to come up to the dorms to visit him. Yes?
So it seems that they didn't have any empathy. They were only interested in the intellectual, and only if it was their good idea.
Could be. Yes, yes. Again, it's food for thought. Yes?
I learned that they knew a tremendous amount of Torah and didn't bring it down to other people.
You mean in terms of sharing the Torah?
They didn't bring it into the world. They were tremendously high level.
They were busy learning Torah. They didn't
No, even more than that they knew insights and they knew what, they were in a tremendously high level and deep level in Torah and that they weren't able to give it over.
Okay, I'm not disagreeing. I'm not familiar with that.
What?
They didn't want to or they didn't?
Either they weren't able to or they didn't want to, right? And they weren't able, I'm not sure. It was just a high level, but they didn't bring it over out into the world.
I'm not sure. I'm not denying it. I have no idea. I'm not familiar with that. I certainly wouldn't read that into either of these two sources.
So the Gemara continues.
Just also as another thing, so that we can then move on. The Gemara says, so We've been focusing now just on what they did wrong, which we don't really know yet. That's going to be the main body of the shiur in a few minutes. But again, the body, the human tragedy, the human dimension. But I've been speaking about the students. But now picture for 1 minute, you're Rabbi Akiva. Could you imagine? Talk about survivor's guilt. But to be the Rebbe, to be the father figure of such a tragedy. So I know if it would be me, I would find the nearest corner, curl up like a ball on the floor, and never be seen from again. But what does the Gemara say Rabbi Akiva did? He found a handful of students. Interestingly, it seems the Gemara seems to stress in a different geographic location. They went to the Darom, they went to the south, and there were a number of 5, 6, 7 Talmidim, and from them is every bit of Torah Shebaal Peh that we have. Remember, that wasn't just before the internet. That wasn't just before, you know, mass publications and cheap desktop publishing. That was before not only the printing press, that was before Torah Shebaal Peh was written down. It was truly Torah Shebaal Peh. It wasn't just human tragedy. On a very real, you know, we often exaggerate things. Here, I'm not exaggerating at all. Torah was realistically at risk of being lost forever. That's who perpetuated Torah from generation to generation. It was these people. There was a glimmer. And mamish, like a phoenix, out of the ashes, Rabbi Akiva and these handful of Talmidim rebuilt. And everything that we have in Torah Shebaal Peh comes from Rabbi Akiva and those Talmidim afterwards. So, without anything else we're about to say, if you really think about what happened, the human drama is really, really tremendous. So I want to ask 3 questions on the story or the phenomenon, and then that will make the basis for the rest of the shiur. My first question, which is kind of hinted at in what was the title of tonight's shiur, which is, how could this have happened to his students? Of all Rebbeim, Rabbi Akiva. After all, we all know, it's actually from a Medrash, the Sifra and Parshas Kedoshim, says that Rabbi Akiva said, what is the klal gadol in the Torah? What's the greatest principle in the whole Torah? V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. Now, that's a jump, but to me, it's a very reasonable jump. Mestama, Rabbi Akiva didn't just like say that once, put it in a file and like, you know, put it in a sefer and then on the... My guess is that pretty regularly the Talmidim heard that from him. Moreover, if you're a Rebbe, if you're a parent, what's even more effective than verbally communicating a lesson? Modeling it. Well, we know from at least one Gemara, and there are others, Rabbi Akiva was a paragon of chesed, of bein aram l'chaveiro. So they had a role model, they had someone who prioritized it. And they, of all Talmidim? Now, the truth is, we have unfortunately, numerous examples, current and past. We could, if we wanted to, point to certain Rebbeim or certain yeshivas that maybe don't give enough weight to the Ben Machavero and the Midos. And then, if you saw something really bad from those Talmidim in terms of their Midos, their Heretz, you could say, well, the yeshiva didn't teach them the right way, the yeshiva didn't prioritize it. Okay, but Rabbi Akiva, that was the name of the yeshiva. And it was his Talmidim. And again, this is just obvious. Probably they didn't just like not say hello one day to Talmidim, to their friends. If it got to this, it must have been pretty bad, right? Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, how did it happen? That's question number one. Question number two is, I wouldn't say the opposite, but from a different perspective, what was so bad? What do I mean? I don't mean it's good to have bad derech eretz. I mean, to die a premature, painful death, a misa ra'ah, to be cut down in the dawn of your life, is it Chil Shabbos? Is it Avodah Zarah? Maybe some of you know. Is there a Gemara somewhere, a Maimar Chazal, a Medrash, that says if you don't give kavod to your friend, you're chayv misa? Seems a little disproportionate, don't you think? The whole Torah Shebaal Peh comes at risk for this? Seems a little exaggerated. Question number two. Question number three, the one part of the Gemara I didn't yet mention, but we've just been assuming, But the Gemara there, the one that we started with, says, originally the Gemara says it all happened b'perek echad at one time. And then the Gemara in the next line identifies, and when was that time? So the Gemara's language is mi-pesach ad atzeres. Now, part of the whole issue with Lag BaOmer and the different minhagim is because, well, some say, well, maybe they died in all the way until Lag BaOmer. Some say, well, no, they died altogether 33 days, but if you take out, they didn't die in a day where you didn't say tachnun. I wasn't talking about chasish shtibul. They never would have died. Maybe the men, the matter if you realize, the men, all, your husbands all know what I mean. Okay? But, you know, going to chasish shtibul is like davening with a moel. You say tachnun a lot less than you don't say tachnun. But the Gemara assumes that there are some of the Mefarshim and Shacharar who work out the Cheshbin. If you think about all the different days in the Seer, we don't say Tal. So it wasn't necessarily until Lag BaOmer. But since it was random and haphazard, then they different Minhagim, but it happened during that time period. And let's assume it even happened half, whenever. Okay, let me ask you, that's when they died, the Gemara says. Why did they die then? Is it plausible to think that they just started sinning then? That doesn't make any sense, does it? I think that, again, it doesn't say one way or the other in the Gemara, but to me, the obvious assumption is, again, I'm not saying it was 5 years, 1 year, maybe it was, I have no idea how long they had been doing this. But probably it didn't just start on Pesach. So if it predated that time period, so why all of a sudden, poof, did they die then? Again, I don't know. Did Hashem wait a month? Did he wait a year? 5 years? I don't know how long it took. But presumably, they didn't just start sinning that minute. So if they had been already sinning, what happened that all of a sudden now they're dying at this period? Okay, three questions, right? A story we all know. Hopefully we appreciate it even more. But now that we appreciate the story, now we realize we don't understand the story. Three questions. Again, right? Number one, how could it be Rabbi Kiva, of all people, his students, really? Number two is, what's so bad about not having Derech Eretz? Okay, it's bad, we yell at our kids if they don't have Derech Eretz. We should correct them if they don't have Derech Eretz. But still, Chayv Misa. Number three, why does the punishment happen now, at this point? So, let's start with the first question. How could it happen? How could it be? How could it be Rabbi Kiva's students would do such a thing? So I want to share with you three answers. Three answers. The first is an answer that I saw in the Sefer Shem Yishmuel. Shem Yishmuel, anyone know, familiar? The Sukachover Rebbe, a grandson of the Kutzker Rebbe. He was a grandson of the Kutzker. So he says the following. It's very interesting. He says, of course Rabbi Akiva taught them about V'hatarecha Kamocha. And Rabbi Akiva was a master pedagogue. They got that lesson. So V'hatarecha Kamocha. They mamish saw each other as limbs of a single body. They were mamish unified, indivisible, a whole, a single unit. So says Hashem Yishmuel, does your right hand give covet to your left? Oh, I love my big toe. I stand up every time you come in the room. Says Hashem Yishmuel, they went too far. Because they loved each other so much, they lost any sense of independence. And ironically and tragically, because of this, they didn't bother. I don't need covet, why should he get covet? I and he, we're all the same people. It would be silly. It's as if I'm mechabed myself. It's Perot, interesting insight. You know, similarly, we have some of Farshim who talk about what's so bad about jealousy or nekama, revenge, right? If you're, you know, let's say you're, you know, you're cutting vegetables for a salad, and unfortunately, by accident, you know, you cut your, I'm a lefty, so if I by accident cut my right index finger, so I don't get upset and take the knife with my right hand and then cut my left hand, because it's all the same person. That's something the Farshim explained. That's what's so problematic about revenge, because we're supposed to see each other as all one body. So says the Shem Yishmuel, they took it too literally, and because of that, they weren't mechabed. It's interesting that idea of it's a good thing, but they went too far when it comes to this. So that reminds me, that's one of the issues some of the Mefarshim, some of the Baal HaDor say when it comes to the idea of minyan, of counting other Jews. Sometimes our chazals, look how terrible it is to count Jews, and it's like an ayin hara, and what's so bad? So there's a certain dialectic, there's a certain balancing act. On the one hand, if you count somebody, you're telling them, you know, everyone counts. On the other hand, what do you risk? Reducing people, you're just a number. So there has to be a certain balancing act. And if you get out of kilter, there's a problem. So apparently, says Hashem Yishmuel, they went too far. Very interesting idea. That's his suggestion. That's number one. In a certain similar, but in a very different way, the famous the Mashkiach, Reb Chaskel Levenstein, in his Sefer, Or Yecheskel, so he says something very interesting. He says, of course, they knew about Haftarah HaChamach, they heard Shmuzim, but, you know, Rabbi Kiva also taught them other things, and other Rebbeim taught them things, and one of the things that they were probably taught a lot of, because they were such big tzaddikim, was, it's a bad thing to run after kavod. Don't be such an egomaniac, don't always be running after kavod, don't want people to mechabed you. Kavod is a bad thing. It's like you're going to run after Gehenna, and it's a bad thing to have a covet, and everyone's all, my covet. So, covet's such a bad thing. How can I give him covet? I'm going to make him into a Baal Gaiva. It's a bad thing. Covet's a bad thing. My Rebbe told me I should be running after covet, so if I should run after covet, should I give him covet? It's like the cooties. I don't want it, but I don't want to give it to you either. And again, says Reb Chaskel Levenstein, it was coming from a good place. Just like the Shem Yishmuel said, it was coming from a good place. But it was a fundamental mistake. There was a flaw. What was the flaw? He says it so beautifully. And he quotes, he says, this was one of the main principles of Yisrael Salanter. When it comes to Midos, when it comes to Musar, we're supposed to have this kind of bifurcated or split personality, and we're supposed to differentiate between me and everyone else. So for example, if I have something that's difficult in my life, so I'm supposed to have bitachon. When someone knocks on my door and comes with one of these hamlatzos and says it's very difficult, so I'm not supposed to say, Rav Yid, you should have bitachon. For him, you're supposed to have hishtadlus. So it's not a contradiction. For you, it's bitachon. But not for somebody else. For them, it's hishtadlus. Or, gives another example. I have a meager salary. So I tell myself, I could be happy with that. Mestapik b'muat, it's enough. I have what I need, the basic necessities. Ezu Ashir, Samech B'chalko, I have all the Mamari Chazal, I have it written down right next to me. When I go to bed every night, I review all the reasons why I should be happy, even though I have nothing. And then a person knocks on the door. I know it basically has the same nothing as me. So I tell him, you should be happy. Mestapik b'muat. Not at all. For that person, you say, no, tzedakah, I want to help you. It's not a contradiction. But it is complicated. Says Reb Chaskel Levenstein, that was the Talmidim's mistake. They didn't know how to make that balancing act. They thought, if kavod's not good for me, it's not good for you either. And that's a mistake. We're supposed to run away from kavod. We're supposed to give everyone else lots of kavod. There's a difference between me and you. It reminds me of another famous line that they quote in the number of Yisrael Salanter. So he used to say that another person's gashmius is my ruchnius. If I'm only worried about food or money, so that's a bad thing. But to be worried about someone else's food and money, that's a very high thing. It's a very noble thing. So that ability to make that split and see the difference, the Talmidim didn't get that. So that's very much meduyuk in the first Gemara, right? This wouldn't work with the Medrash of Tzara Sayin. But the Gemara, Rabbi Shalom Nohagu, covered. So we, not just you, not just me, lots of Rebbeim, lots of Shurim, lots of Moras, we extrapolate, they didn't have good midos. No, it's very meduyuk. They might have been nice in other things. Didn't mean that they cut in line or that they were making fun of or bullying. It was one thing. But it was a fatal flaw, apparently. Shalom nahagu kavod zebezeh. They thought, if it's not good for me, why should I do for you? Yeah.
But Rabbi Akiva didn't know that.
So that's a question on the whole Parsha, which is, whatever it was, where was Rabbi Akiva? And it seems from other sources also that he did understand. In other words, there's two possibilities, right? Each one is more tragic than the other. One possibility is that he didn't know at the time, which is mysterious and tragic, but when he found out, that must have been bad enough. It's almost more tragic to think that he never knew why it happened. Right? That's also a possibility. So I think there are, if I'm not mistaken, I think there are some midrashim, some makaros that indicate Rabbi Akiva becoming aware of the problem post facto. But I don't know of anyone who tries to address what Rabbi Akiva knew at the time. It's a very puzzling thing. I don't have a real answer for you. Yeah.
Does it say anywhere, like, what changed with the next group of...
Well, wait, there are some who actually say that the Hove HaHafter HaKamocha came afterwards. Yeah, most of the Sfarim that I'm familiar with, you know, who struggle with this, are obviously assuming not that way. Yeah, they're assuming that, I'm saying that, so, I don't know, I'm not sure. It's, again, the Gemara just says... A, that he went on, which is, I said, very courageous on a certain sense. And we don't know. We would all would want to know, like, what's the secret. But one thing we do know is that, at least the second time around, was successful. Like I said, the greatest gedolim of the Tanaim came from his Talmidim, and the whole Torah Shabbat Peh we have is from those Talmidim in the second go-around. So, but I'm not sure, yeah.
I once heard that the Lo Nagu Kavod was that they all heard Rabbi Akiva's shiur. Not all at once, maybe, but...
Right.
And then when they were discussing it, they all heard a different... They all had different understanding, because that's how
Torah
is. And that was what they didn't respect. They didn't respect, because they said, he's my Rebbe, and this is what he said. And
in learning, they couldn't... That's what similar Mrs. Grossman said before, that in learning...
Right. In learning...
Specifically then, in learning, they couldn't respect the difference.
And maybe that's why it happened before Kabbalah's the Torah, because in order to...
Right, so I'm going to get to the timing issue. I'm going to get to. Yeah, I think it's very possible. Again, especially if you assume that there were 24,000 students. So another question that often is asked: well, why didn't the Gemara call it 24,000? Why does it say 12,000 pairs? So it certainly seems like the Gemara is by doing that, by saying 12,000 pairs, is the Gemara is suggesting that the problem wasn't just coincidentally with Harusas, but perhaps specifically in that context. The Chasam Sofer speaks about that it was dafka in the context of Torah, where there's even a higher level perhaps that's required. The whole idea of Elu Ve'elu, which is not an easy thing in any generation, to be respectful of other people who have different opinions. I want to move on, if it's okay. I want to just, because I don't want to hold you too long, but Baruch Hashem, there's still a lot more good stuff to say. Yes, quickly, please.
It's just that now he started with five. Maybe he realized doing the 24,000 is like having a big classroom, one teacher doesn't work.
Okay, interesting.
Maybe
okay.
Five only.
But they didn't stay just a small number. They obviously eventually multiplied. But I don't know, but it's a good chance it didn't ever get that big again. That's definitely
could
possible.
24,000
be followers calls them Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. Now again, what exactly Talmidei mean? Again, you know, there's a Rebbe in the mirror who has like 600 Talmidim. How many of them really are close with him? You know, they say, for example, one of the greatest things that they used to say about Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel was that pretty much everyone felt that he knew them. I don't know if humanly possible even, but enough really did, let's just put it that way, which is extraordinary. But 24,000, how many of them were really close to Rabbi Akiva? It's possible that not everyone was close enough to really be mushpa in terms of the Gadol Shimusho, Yosser Milumot, possible. But the Gemara does refer to them as Talmidei Rabbi Akiva. You know, it wasn't just that they read a shir on the internet or something. They definitely had a relationship, that seems to be from the Gemara. So I want to give you a third answer, which is a little bit my own and a little bit putting together some things that I saw in some other places. But if you ask me, for whatever it's worth, you're mamish free to disagree. In my heart of hearts, I really believe this is the right answer. And it's as follows. I'll introduce it by asking you a question that... Over the last year, I've taught in two different places, one a boys' school, one a boys' yeshiva, one a girls' seminary, a class on Hilchos Ben Am L'Chaveiro. In both classes, I started off with the same survey question. I'll just alter it since you guys don't look like you're in seminary anymore. Lifelong learners, for sure, but not in seminary. I meant that in the most complimentary way. It would be scandalous if you were still in seminary, but anyway. If I were to tell you the following, I want you to, if you're comfortable, you can even literally close your eyes, but if not, then just concentrate for a minute on the following image. If I were to tell you, there's a certain person, maybe it's a friend you haven't seen in a while, or even a stranger, a new person moving to the neighborhood, and I would describe her to you as really from. She is super, ultra from. It's just, I know, okay, other than having a long white beard, what else do you, in your mind, what are you assuming now about her? So give me something specific. I'll throw out one. She davens a very long Shmon Esrei. Good. What else?
She has extreme in many ways.
You need to be more specific. Give me, what do you think of? A long skirt. Sinias.
I'm going to use
Okay, good. So, right. In the cat's family, she researches all the hashgacha things. She knows everything. Called, right, okay, so long skirts, covered eyebrows. She wasn't born with ears. No makeup. Of course, Chas V'Shalom.
No,
oh my gosh, for sure. She doesn't even know what it is. Huh? For sure, of course not. Chas V'Shalom. Yes, right? Anybody else? Okay, tznius, davening, kashrus. Good. You are exactly like all the other students I ever had, which is totally normal. Because no one ever gives an example of Ben Amachavero.
There was once, there was once an email that went around with a joke, and it said the Chumra of the Week. If they're willing to supply everybody with the Chumra of the Week so that they look firmer than their friends, it's like a joke. They said, we're very sorry, but due to absolutely no demand, we have no chumras for the day of Dama Chavera. Because nobody wants.
How come we didn't think about someone who is zealous in Ben Amla Chavera? She's so makbid on Bikur Cholim. So once I say it, of course you have that in mind. If I were to tell you there was this woman with the long skirt and the big tichel who's obnoxious, we understand that that's not good. We do, right, ladies? Good. But we are all, for the most part, victims of this phenomenon. So I have thought this way, as I say, you could ask my Talmidim, I think I taught it first to the boys, I think it was, back in Elul. I asked them because they're 18 or they just came. I said, if I were to tell, you know, last year you were in 12th grade, and Pesach time, some of the boys who were in Eretz Yisrael came back, and you heard that so-and-so had flipped out. You know, what did you think? So they gave all the boy versions of exactly what you said. Same thing, right? So I've been doing this for at least a year. Again, it seems posh, right? So it happens to be just the other day, I was reading an amazing article. There's a professor, a psychologist and professor of psychology education, and I think he lives in Borough Park, named Aaron Hirschfried. I think he's a Hasidic chef. And he's a very brilliant guy. And in the last number of years, he's written 4 articles which have had the whole world tumbling, because he's really a very open, very, very profound and provocative thinker. There's a journal in Flatbush called Chakira. You can get it online. You could read it, which I did this afternoon in my kitchen for free. I didn't have to buy it because the journal's online. And he wrote a number of articles over the years, the last 4 articles in particular. And one or two of them dealt with this overall phenomenon about what's going on in our yeshivas and our day schools, etc. And really, it was one of the, you know, Mamish, you know, like as a speaker, you know, or as a rabbi, you know, somebody would say to me, Rabbi, we don't all agree with the drasha, but we spent the whole Shabbos lunch talking about it. That's the best compliment you could get. So he had, in these articles, people who read it, people were talking. He really stirred up a hornet's nest, and I thought in a very good way. So sure enough, I remember this. It was when I still lived in Baltimore, was when the first article came out. And I remember thinking that it had some connection to this. So sure enough, I went back today and I found it online and I read it. And I couldn't believe it. Lo and behold, I'll read you the following paragraph. And he makes this point without my survey shtick. But he basically makes the point. And then he says the following. One of the difficulties in getting people to adhere to mitzvot ben amlechavero is that they are simply not grabbed by them emotionally. This is because they do not see these mitzvot as part of being frum. That is, they don't get the frum high. It's a great phrase. He puts it in quotes. They don't get the frum high that they get from Benam Lamakom, such as shofar or matzah or some even when they fast. Helping another person doesn't make us feel frum. That's a fascinating, profound insight, which is exactly what I think I've seen time after time. So my suggestion is that perhaps we should understand the Gemara quite literally. With all... for all the creative brilliance of Chaskel Levenstein and Shemi Shmuel, let's take the Gemara much more simply. So how could it be that Rabbi Akiva's students, perhaps, at least with some of them, maybe they just didn't buy it. Rabbi Akiva is saying, Ben Amlechavero, Ben Amlechavero. And in their mind is, yeah, but, you know, how much maror do I have to eat? They wouldn't be the first Talmidim, they certainly wouldn't be the last. People just don't take Ben Amlechavero seriously. Even when the Rebbe is Rebbe Akiva. In an earlier piece than the one I quoted, but also from the same journal Chakira, from the same author, Refri, he tells the following amazing story. He said that Reb Ruvain Feinstein told the story that when he was Rashiv in Staten Island, that he had one Talmud, you can see how old the story is, he lent his friend a tape recorder. My kids wouldn't have any idea what that is. A tape recorder. And while the person's borrowing it, it accidentally broke. So the owner said, you owe me the money. And he said, but it was a complete accident. So they come, or Shishiva will ask him. And Reuven Feinstein is in mourning. Because the Gemara that addresses that question is the Gemara that they're learning. Some of your kids have learned that Gemara. So afterwards, he went to his father. He went down to the Lower East Side to Reb Moshe. He said, what's going on? How could it be? And he said that Reb Moshe told him, yeah, of course you're teaching, you're banging, we're teaching it. But they see no connection between the Gemara and their life. So that could happen with any mitzvah. You could have a person who's learning Maseches Brachos and not making Brachos. Who's learning all about davening and not really davening. And all about the lumdus of shofar and then doesn't. It could be. But I don't think it's a coincidence. I think we're much more prone to do that in the area of Benam L'Chaveiro. Rabbi Kiva could give 100 shurim on behalf of Racha Kamocha. And there'll be a certain percentage of Talmidim who consciously or maybe even subconsciously will write that off. Not that it's bad, but it's not really what's important. I think it's very possible. You'll tell me, how could it really be? Listen to the following Gemara. The Gemara says, there's a concept which also some of you may be familiar with from Chumash, Sefer Vayikra, called Pigul. The Kohen is thinking an incorrect thought when he's working on a karbon. Maybe the wrong karbon, or a different amount of time you can eat the karbon, or thinking about the wrong owner. That disqualifies the karbon. That's called Pigul. So the Gemara says that not only does that disqualify the karbon, but the Kohen who was working with the karbon, his hands are tied, he has to go to the mikvah. So the Gemara says that is not from the Torah. That was a Chachamim made that rule. Why? Amazingly, says the Gemara. Because Kohanim are human too. And sometimes the guy who comes in with the karbon, or could be the gal, women can bring karbonos too, the Kohen didn't like him. They're not friends. They're nice to me in shul. Maybe he didn't give me truma last year. So you know what he did? I'll show him. And intentionally thought the wrong thought. And there, the guy's out, $500 on the big cow that he brought for the karbon. Sorry, it was an accident. Oh, yeah, you're Yanko. I thought you were Beryl. I thought of the wrong name. Sorry, it's Pigul. It was really on purpose. So says the Gemara, when the Chachamim became aware of this problem, the Chachamim instituted, you should know, if you're involved with the Pigul, you're going to have to go to the mikvah. Thinking that that would somehow curb their nature. Comes along Tosfos and asks, I don't understand. If they don't care about, in essence, stealing from a person, Kemokain lo yichoshu lasos betumah. Why is that going to be a problem? Ooh, I don't want to become Tamei. So says Tosfos. Amazing. Again, it could have been written today. Af l'rashoyim. You see, the Tosfos refers to someone who ruins other people's money as a Rasha. Af l'rashoyim chamir l'hutumah. Give you money, I can steal from you. Oh, but the mikvah, ooh, very from. And Tosfos says, and don't even blame me. It's an earlier source. It's a Gemara Maseches Yuma. The Gemara tells an astounding story of two young Kohanim, two kids, two Bachrim, who were each running towards the Mizbeach because they wanted to do the Avodah, and one was falling behind and he stabbed his friend. That's not the bad part of the story. As the victim is lying there, not yet dead, but dying, all the other Kohanim come out, including the father of the victim. What's their first instinct, said the Gemara? We have to get the knife out so it doesn't become Tamei. It's a Gemara, which Tosfos quotes. It says, you see from here the following human reality. Human beings are complex, which is a nice way of saying sometimes not so good.
Well, maybe that's why the
yes, yes, yes. Again, not because it's hard when a not nice person to be nice to them or to be polite to people who are impolite. That, but I think you're saying that what I'm saying.
We know ourselves.
Yeah,
we know who we are. We know what the next guy is. Okay, so
right. I think that's all true. And if I was giving just a shem b'hafla kamocha, I would spend even more time on that. The Rambam, they talk about it. Is it literally kamocha? How do we do that? We're human. But I think here is that. But it's also this other point, which is on some level, that we can rationalize. That's why we could have prisons with Mahadrim. How could it be? I mean, it's really a sickening thing. We just take it all for granted now. But if you just rewind in your mind, it should be impossible. one person had a freak act, but there should be minyanim. Dafyomi. How could it be? The answer is exactly what Tosfos said many, many, many years ago. Even though you're a Rasha when it comes to other people's money, but for Tumah, things that we decide what rates. And invariably, we decide that Beram L'Makom comes before Beram L'Chaveiro.
So why do we decide that? Why is that?
Because Dr. Fried is a psychologist. Mm-hmm. But I think on some level he's right. We don't get the from high. It's not just, people sometimes feel, lots of people feel good about doing chesed. Mm-hmm. It's not the same thing as feeling from.
Is it because it's not as measurable? Or
again, you don't have to agree to this because I don't want to indict you in public. But if you want, I will email you the link to the article. This is what the whole article is about. The whole article, which is, again, yeah, I mean, he gives a number of anecdotes, including the one I mentioned from Reuven Feinstein and others, to illustrate the problem. But let's be honest, he didn't really need to, because we all know the problem exists. He just had the courage to publish it in a journal in Flatbush. And he's talking about the Chadarim, and he's not talking about the other. He's talking about Unzer. Okay? But then he's trying to explain why it is, and how come we've done such a good job being mechanech other things, but not this. That's exactly what he's trying to address. And then, of course, people got upset with the first article. He had to write a second article. It's very stimulating reading. It's definitely good food for thought. There's a sefer. There's a Rav in Kiryas Sefer, who wrote a sefer, Rav Karp, the big posek. So he has a sefer called Hichos Chag B'Chag. So he mentions, again, not exactly my point, but in a certain way, and again, it relates a little bit to what was said before, in both sides of the room here, that we know there's another Gemara in Ksubis about when he came home. After all those years learning, the whole crowd comes out to greet him, including who? His wife. And what did the Talmidim do? True, they didn't know who she was, but still, what did they do? They pushed her. Get away. So says Rabbi Karp, why did they do that? They didn't know it was right. And he assumes that they did know it was the wife. They didn't know who she was. Because they want to see the Rebbe. Because their Yiddishkeit, their Avodas Hashem, to be close to the Rebbe, was more important even than covet for the wife of the Rosh Hashiva. It's astounding, but again, it's the Gemara. Rabbi Karp says, if this is the way they were willing to treat the wife of the Rosh Hashiva, you're surprised how they treated each other? So how, again, but it's all the point, but how could it be? So I think that this is part of the issue. Rabbi Fried in this article quotes a woman, a doctor, I don't remember her last name, but obviously she's from, who's writing, again, also from a psychological perspective about this. She coins a great phrase. She says, we won't be successful until we can convince our kids the chutzpah is muktzah. How do you like that? Chutzpah is muktzah. Try it with your own kids. I know that I have an uphill battle with my own. No one's family is perfect, that's for sure. Right? My kids would never, chas v'shalom, by accident, lots of things happen, but to do something on purpose, muktzah. And especially with the younger kids, muktzah means everything. If I were to cook lunch from scratch, my little kid would say, Abba, you're doing muktzah. Right, because that's just a catch-all phrase for anything that's also on Shabbos until they get older. Abba, you forgot to make Kiddush, it's muksa. Anything that's... okay, fine, but okay, to turn on something electric. But they're chutzpah, aren't they? Sometimes, at least. Not only in my house. Right? Okay? But so chutzpah is muksa. What a line. But for some reason, but why are we all smiling? Because it sounds so funny. But why is it funny? Chutzpah should be like muksa. To be mechutzav to your parents is much worse of an avera than muksa. Muksa is only mid rabbanon. But this is, again, the why from a psychological perspective, you have to read his article. And I'm not saying that's the last word either. It's clearly complex. But it's a phenomenon we all know it's true. And again, my suggestion is, perhaps this is really, if it affects all of us, there's no reason it couldn't have affected Rabbi Kiva's Talmidim.
But I think that when a person... Many times when a person does chesed, not even chesed, but does something bifnim, they do have more of a feeling of that they did something good or a high than they do if they're just davening everyday chakras. And a person bifnim very deeply feels if he's doing something for someone, he didn't even know he's doing it, and he's doing something, a mitzvah for someone, you can feel much closer.
I'm not,
you don't really feel like you're doing the right thing.
First of all, I'm not saying it's impossible, and I'm not saying there aren't lots of people who do. Of course, it's absolutely attainable, and I'm hoping it's not completely absent. But again, I think, and this is the difference. And again, maybe not for you, halavai for all of us. I think there's a different there's sipa kanefesh in the sense of feeling good about yourself, which most people do if they do a chesed, is different than how we feel after ne'ilah. It's a different feeling.
After what?
After ne'ilah, right? You're screaming Hashemu Elokim. Right? We all feel like we're floating a few inches above the ground. Yeah, that is part of it. Yeah. So in the second article of Dr. Frieda, the whole footnote was someone who tried to explain, you know, about the whole issue of that, of non-Jews versus Jews. Why don't we don't make a bracha on chesed? So someone wanted to suggest, because maybe really chesed doesn't bring kedusha to a person, and Dr. Fried explains that that's a horrible mistake. Of course it does. But psychologically, that is how people feel. That is how people feel.
But it's not because of society. It's not because of the society that we're living in. It's every person on his own.
I'm not sure what you mean.
Because you see in society that, for example, you know, like the kavod given in the from world is given based on the
Beit HaMikdash. Yes, not
Yeah. Yes. Always. So nobody will say, well.
That is part of it. I don't remember, honestly, if Dr. Fried, each article is like 40 pages. I should just warn you before I email it to you. The long articles with lots of footnotes. But I don't remember if he mentions that, but there's certainly a certain truth to that. Clearly, whether it's he speaks about, for example, in our homes. Right? What do we get more upset about? Right? If you saw your child turning on the light on Shabbos, I mean, let's say he was doing it deliberately. How would you react compared to if you see them intentionally, you know, hurting their younger brother or something like that? Right? How we react, how we give onshim, our kids are figuring out what's important to us. Again, these are complex things. They're all pieces in a puzzle. But clearly, communal kavod is a factor, right? When a mosad is willing to mechavid someone because they gave lots of money, even though everyone knows they do other things, that's an obvious one. But there are other things. Yeah, there could be other things.
Right.
So you're making a statement. There's no question about it. Listen, the bottom line, again, I'm not going to mention any names. I hope no one knows exactly what I'm referring to because it was so painful to me to witness. But a number of years ago, there was a certain very well-known from Askan, who was on trial in court in New York, and a certain, quote, Gadol, who was in Shiva, matured for himself to go from his Shiva house to testify on behalf of this guy who was indicted and eventually sent to prison for not just, you know, tax cheats, come on, that's like almost a mitzvah already. He was laundering money for Colombian drug lords. And the person, this big Gadol, got up on Shiva to testify on his behalf. Now, I'm not saying that there wasn't some cheshbon that matzdik did. Maybe there was. But one thing I can tell you for sure, the message that sent the community, you can't argue with it. Right? And again, there are other examples I didn't want to say. I'm not here to pick on anyone, and every part of the community has their own problem. But you're right. Clearly, what we're mechabed. Now, no one is saying, so not me, and I would hope Rabbi Akiva wouldn't either, that we shouldn't be mechabed Torah and Talmid Chachamim. Of course we should. But it's true, whether it's in our schools or, you know, it's not just what's important, just the best learner or also the biggest mensch. Now, again, I think in recent years, at least in some circles, in some type of schools, there's been a little bit of a boomerang, and they are trying to but a lot of ground to make up. A lot of ground to make up. So I want to move on because I want to only keep you for 10 more minutes, and I have a little bit more to say. So now, with all of this now in the rearview mirror, why is all of this so bad? Right? I said, after all, death? Okay, so they weren't nice. But that's not usually something that we expect a chiyuv misa for. So what was so bad? So two answers for you, which I think are very important, and then we'll get to the last issue, which is why during Sefira. So why so bad? So some suggest, like the Ben Yehoyada, famous one of the great Sephardi Mefarshim on the Gemara, Ben Yehoyada says, because it was they caused the Chil Hashem. Now, he doesn't explain exactly what he means, but what I think he means is, this behavior, whatever it is that they did, whatever reason why they did it, if you or I do it, it's not a good thing. But when the big Rav cuts you in line, when Rosh Hashiva cuts, when Rosh Hashiva steals, this is a much bigger Chil Hashem. So could you imagine? Again, it just seems obvious. It's not in any Gemara Medrash. But again, it must have been really bad, right? They didn't just do something once. They didn't just do, you know, by accident not say thank you the third time. Clearly there was something flawed there, right? And a lot of them, a lot of people. And it was all the yeshiva bachurim. I don't think, and I don't want to get into any contemporary issues, I don't think people often realize the Chilul Hashem that we cause. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach speaks about, and he's the only one ever so speaks about it, but it's so obvious once you read him what he says. It. He says, we could be over the Isser of Lifnei Iver by causing a non-from person to hate Frumkeit. There's so much of anti-Torah. So Shlomo Zalman says, why do you think that they're anti-Torah? Let's say you're right. I'm not assuming that they really are anti-Torah. But let's just say, Naniach. So Shlomo Zalman, because we're over Lifnei Iver. If you do something that brings somebody to hate Torah, that's your Avera. That's Lifnei Iver, he said. Any more than giving a cup of wine to a Nazir. That's what Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in the Tshuva. So says the Ben Yoyada, what a Chilul Hashem that the Talmidim of all people of Rabbi Akiva didn't have Derech Eretz, Shlomo Kaza was there. That's not just about Midos. Now you're talking about bringing down the whole Torah. A very weighty thing for us to think about. That's one possibility. A second possibility, which is given, discussed in many of the Mefarshim, speaks about the importance of Chesed. Because on the one hand, we're mentioning that psychologically, subconsciously, we don't give it enough weight. But the MS, the truth is, that the Torah, the Chazal, give Bnei Machavero enormous weight. In fact, Mishnah Pirkei Avos, Perek Gimel, right, says, if there's no Derech Eretz, there's no Torah. So says Rabbeinu Yonah on that Mishnah, what it means is, chronologically, first one has to have Derech Eretz, good midos, only then can they have Torah. Rabbi Yonah is not saying it's not worth anything if you don't have it. You should do your Derech Eretz first. Rabbi Yonah says something even more. He says you will not get the Torah. Let's say a person says, I know Derech Eretz is important, but right now is my time to shtaik. When I get home in Bein Hazman, I'll work on my midos. Says Rabbi Yonah, that may be sincere and well-meaning, but it won't work. Because, as Shmuel Rozovsky and from Panovich and others used to say, midos are what create what they call the clay kibul. It's Torah, right? Torah is like mayim, right? You need to pour, if you're going to pour that Torah into you, you have to have something that can contain it, that can hold it. What makes you, your body, your personality, into the type of thing which can, quote-unquote, hold or contain Torah? Derech Eretz. If you don't have Derech Eretz, then it's like pouring the water into the spaghetti strainer. The water just goes out. It doesn't hold it. Im ein Derech Eretz, there's no Torah. Reb Chaim Vital says, you know why? There's no specific words. What's the pasuk in the Torah that says, have good midos? How come there's no specific? We mentioned about no bracha, or maybe non-Jews also have this. There's no specific pasuk. Says Reb Chaim Vital, you know why? Because it's the prerequisite for the whole Torah. There is no Torah without good midos. So we, you know, again, it's true, and it's interesting about why, not for now, but it's true. Yes, if there'd be a Sanhedrin, you wouldn't bring the person to the Sanhedrin and say, you know, he was rude to me in the grocery store. Give him Malkus or give him a chi of Misa. They're not going to. It's not a capital crime. But say a number of Mefarshim that I was just referring to, including Rabbi Yonah and others, Bnei Torah, the Masori about Torah Shabbat Peh. You say, well, how? It was so bad. It wasn't that they had Torah but didn't have Midos. Because they didn't have the Midos, they didn't have the Torah. And that's why they had to die. Because had Torah Shabbal Peh been communicated through them, it would have been a distorted Torah. It would have been a Torah that had been fashmutzed. Better to start over with 5, with 7 that have Derech Eretz than 24,000 without. And now we understand, conclude, why now? Because what's happening now? We're marching day by day towards Kabbalah HaTorah. And you all know the Rashi and Shmos, quoting the Medrash, right, that they were at Yichon, right, next to the mountain. What does Rashi say? Ki ish echad b'lev echad. You couldn't get Har Sinai. There can't be a Kabbalah HaTorah without Achdus, without Derech Eretz, without Avas Yisrael. There is no Torah. So, of course, they didn't all of a sudden, just after Pesach, decide to start, you know, they came back for the new Zman and started being mean to each other. No, of course, it had predated it. But the same Avera that was tolerable in Teves is not tolerable leading up to Shavuos. Right? Say, let's say someone has a low immune system. Right? So in the summer, maybe you're okay. Your health may be, your condition is stable, But in a different circumstance, in the winter, at a different time of the year, all of a sudden you're going to get sick. How come I get sick in the spring at the same condition? The difference is, it's not just the condition, it's also the context. So whatever problem these, unfortunately, Talmidim had on their level, whatever that means, but this time of year, it can't be resolved. In fact, I saw this idea from a number of Sfarim, including in the shul the other day, from the Sefer Ohev Yisrael, who says in the Sefer, on Parshas Emor, on Sfiras Omer, says, I didn't bring the quote, but he says it right there, that's the whole purpose of Sfira. The whole purpose of Sfira is, even before Bekiva students, was to, as a hachana for Kabbalah Satorah. And what kind of hachana, he says? Chedush HaRim says the same thing, I'm a ger, equal time. The Chedush HaRim says the same thing as Ohev Yisrael, the Apter Rav. Why? Because in order to have a hachana for every generation, every year, to re-accept the Torah and Shavuos, we have to work on our midos. I'm going to leave you with one story. We should end it on a positive. So if this is the problem, again, now we understand what were our three questions. Rabbi Akiva, students of all? Yes, even Rabbi Akiva, sometimes, either because they misunderstood him, or maybe they didn't take him seriously. Yes, why was it so bad? Why was it this time of year? But zelu mazeh, right? We know this is the way Hashem made the world. Whatever could happen l'ra is also true for tov. So if this is the kind of chil Hashem and the destruction that can come from bad midos, especially bad midos from people, so the opposite is equally true. The good that can come directly to your students, to your children, the Kiddush Hashem that you can create, you can literally build worlds. The Gemara says when the Talmid Rabbi Akiva died, the earth was desolate until Rabbi Akiva restarted. So we can do just the opposite. So I didn't see it inside, but one of our neighbors told me that in the newest Rabbi Pesach Chromebook, he had the following story, which I love this story, and I think it's a perfect way to end this year. He says there was a bachur in Gateshead who was about to leave after a number of years to, I think, come to Eretz Yisrael to learn. And he was the most popular, most beloved Talmud in Gateshead. He was a very good learner, and very popular, and very charismatic, and very funny, and very nice. The Rebbeim loved him, the friends loved him, everybody loved him, and they made a big suda for him, a goodbye suda, sudas preda. So he got up to speak. He told the following story, which is missing a detail or two, but hopefully the lesson comes through anyway. He says, you know, when I first got to the yeshiva, I was not a bad kid, but I wasn't who's standing here today. But there's something that happened in the beginning of my time here that changed me. Apparently, again, I ain't the newest Pesach Chromebook, to get the details that I'm a little bit off on. He was in either, I think it was some kind of an office or a classroom, or I think it was the library. And somehow, apparently there's a door. I'm not sure why, this is what I don't understand, but the door was locked. He locked the door. He was inside. Someone knocked on the door, wanted to come in. He ignored it. Person said, it's the Rosh Yeshiva. So, of course, he said, you know, Yankel, stop kidding around. So, 2 or 3 minutes later, another knock on the door. It's Rosh Yeshiva, can I come in? Yankel, give me another minute, I'm not joking. Happened once or twice. Until finally, I find Yankel, I'll open the door. And he opens the door. And of course, it's the Rosh Yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva walked in to get the Sefer like this. Covering his eyes until he got right in front of the books, took the Sefer out, covers his eyes again, and leaves. And until that moment, at that Suda, the Rosh Yeshiva had no idea who that boy was. He said, I'm telling you right now, as sure as I stand here, if the Rosh Yeshiva had just walked in like a normal person, the next day I would have left the yeshiva. Not because he would have kicked me out. I would have been mortified. I could never look him in the face again. That act of chesed made me who I am today. Is that amazing? If you could do it for one person, you could do it for anybody. And you know the best part about that story is, you don't have to be the Rosh Yeshiva of Gateshead to be that nice to another person. You don't have to be, some things we need to be brilliant for, or something that you don't need to be brilliant for. You don't have to be a tzaddik to do that. You just need to be a nice person. We can all do that. Take care, everybody. Thank you for coming.